Hey, AI chatbot Cove, can you tell us what the movie The Sasquatch Gang is about?
So the plot of The Sasquatch Gang revolves around Gavin and his friends discovering some large footprints in the woods, which sets off a Bigfoot craze in their town. At the same time, there are these characters named Zerk and Shirts who try to create fake Sasquatch evidence to make some money off the situation. It's got that quirky humor that you might recognize from Napoleon Dynamite, since Tim Skousen, the director, worked on that film as well. A fun piece of trivia is that the movie premiered at the Slamdance Film Festival and won the Audience Award, so it definitely has a bit of a cult following.
Hey, thanks, man. It sounds like you really enjoyed it. We watched The Sasquatch Gang, which means it's time for another Portland at the Movies.
In a world, in a time, in a land of eternal beauty, all that stands between a city and a disaster, in a city where anything can happen, if you thought you had seen it all.
You're gonna grow up to be a total Q-hole.
What's a Q-hole?
Why don't you look in the mirror?
Hello and welcome to another episode of Portland at the Movies. My name is Todd Workove and I am joined, as always, by Mark Middleton. How are you, Mark?
Hey, Todd, I'm doing really well on this fantastic movie that I totally remember.
That's right. And joined, of course, with Brian, the Unipiper Kid. How are you, Brian?
Doing really good. I just had the biggest dish of deja vu that I think I've ever had.
Yes, we are barely holding it together. This the second time we've attempted to do this podcast for the Sasquatch Gang. We met together about a month ago and had a pretty great discussion for about 40 minutes or so, and then realized that our memory card had gotten corrupted somehow, didn't record, and it was unsalvageable. So we had to call it for that one, and we are getting together now, and we are, Mark and I are both holding, not just the hand holding our microphones, but hand holding our microphone holders because we forgot the clips for the table.
Yeah. And we're
then,
a mess.
And then Brian is on his own Yeti microphone over there because
even though we're in the same room.
In the same room, and it's weird not to hear you in my headphones too, because you're not hooked up to the board properly. But we wouldn't let anything stop us from discussing the 2006 movie The Sasquatch Gang, a movie that Mark just said, of course, we all remember having seen a month and a half ago, and I don't think any of us revisited for this.
No, this will be interesting because we can figure out like what in the movie actually sticks with you.
What stays and what goes. Well, I remembered, before we dig into it, there's a couple people, and one of the characters, the comic relief character, shirtless guy, named Shirts. We all remember him. He has been in a bunch of stuff and working pretty continually since then. He was in Cabin Fever, which is another episode we've done here. But I handpicked just to get us back into this spirit of Shirts. Some of my favorite things from his IMDb page, and one of them is Deep Space 69.
Nice.
Breast Picture.
Is that filmed in Portland?
Sadly, no. Nor was Three Matthew McConaughey's and a Baby. Nor was Gay Town. So,
all right,
to his credit, he has been he has been in a lot of stuff and does a pretty great job in this one.
He has found a niche.
He has found a niche. And it's been so long now since the reveal of this next bit of information, this trivia that I found that blew me away, because the writer of this, or the screenplay and director, but I can't say that. I'm going back to the screenplay, was written by the same guy that wrote the screenplay for this. I have to look this up a second. Hold on. I did a circular sentence in my head.
Wait, you're saying that the person who wrote this movie also wrote this movie?
I also wrote this movie, and I forgot to say what movie he did. Right? Hold on.
I also, I was going back to my notes about this movie to refresh my memory, and then realized that I had decided I would just take some notes the second time I watched the movie, and then never really watched it a second time.
Yes.
You guys are in for a treat.
That's funny. But what does tie this movie to, do you guys know what this, what ties this movie to the recent 2025 Minecraft movie?
Oh, it's something about the director.
Yes, the director of Minecraft movie is Jared Hess, who also did Napoleon Dynamite. And this movie heavily, heavily comes from
It was like the director of photography or the screenwriter or something of Napoleon Dynamite who directed this movie.
Yes, yes. And who also, the writer-director, also did was the producer of The Last Blockbuster, which is the documentary about The Last Blockbuster in Bend. And, shocking, I've gotten to reveal this to you twice now, Brian, and it warms my heart. It makes this all worth it, which is not true. But he also did Raiders, the story of the greatest fan film of all time.
Oh, that's such a heartwarming film.
Which is a great, yeah, documentary about those boys that did the shot-for-shot remake of Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is pretty great. So, but this movie, I remember when I turned it on the first time and I was really, really enjoying it. And then when our favorite Shirts comes out, who's like this dopey stoner, pretty hilarious guy that has this interesting way of an interesting speech pattern and is very, I don't know how else to describe him, but I was finding him amusing. And then I sort of realized the connection to Napoleon Dynamite because of all these people working behind the scenes. And I wasn't sure how that I had a friend. He's no longer my friend. No, a friend long time ago who really, really hated Napoleon Dynamite and a few of his. And so I've only seen Napoleon Dynamite once. I have a weird taste in my mouth about it. And so I honestly don't know if Napoleon Dynamite is good or it's one of those things that everyone else thought was good but wasn't real. Like it was so where do we all fall on Napoleon Dynamite?
I think it sat in a perfect little pocket of time that was very specific and we hadn't seen anything like that at that time. And there's been a ton of attempts to recreate that magic,
yeah.
But it was all filmed in the, you know, hills of Rigby, Idaho and using people that were real in that environment, and it had a very specific tone that felt authentic at the time, and everybody that I knew quoted everything in the voice of Napoleon Dynamite. Yes.
And I think that is also coloring my perception of it too, that it just became such a quotable thing and overquoted and quoted for the wrong and all that. So
I love Napoleon Dynamite.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I will go to my grave defending Napoleon Dynamite.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. And I did think over this last month, I'm like, I should watch it again just for the context. And then I did not. Instead, I did almost everything else.
I saw Napoleon Dynamite on opening night, not because I was trying to seek it out or anything, but I was in college and we just wanted to go see a movie and we ended up seeing
Napoleon Dynamite.
And it was one of those things where I felt like I was in on something special before everyone else.
And you kind of were. I mean, it took a while for that movie to kind of take off.
It did. And then I kept telling people about it and they were like, huh, what? And I also think it's a movie that you can sort of maybe figure out how old someone is based on whether how much they like it. I've seen some.
It's like a lens, like a long lens where you, like, as you turn it, different parts of it come in focus. That's kind of the age thing. Like when you focus it to Napoleon Dynamite, you're like, oh, okay, that's this age where it's in focus and everybody else kind of like it's gone past them.
And today everybody just knows of White Lotus and the character in White Lotus who is Uncle Rico.
Dynamite,
and you're like, oh, that's Uncle Rico, and they're like,
who? Yeah,
I think the worst thing about Napoleon Dynamite is the legacy of all of the imitations that tried that came out afterwards.
Yeah,
and none of them were just did not have that same spark.
So then, speaking of, I was looking at my notes here, and my last time we tried to record this, my opening was Napoleon Dynamite meets Rashomon meets the Disney Channel, because to me, this really had. Like in my memory, I guess I don't feel like Napoleon Dynamite like was a grown-up movie, but I didn't feel like it's it was aimed at a younger audience. Like this one kind of felt to me, because this was much more like zany and like
Napoleon, more potty humor.
Yeah. And Napoleon Dynamite, for as surreal as it is, seems grounded in a reality.
Yeah, it's one of those movies that doesn't really feel like it's aiming for a demographic. It's just existing on its own terms.
Right. And this one very much felt exploitative, but for a kind of a different audience. Right. And I very much, having said all that, I really did enjoy this movie when I did watch it last month. I found there was a lot of charming things about it. It's not a great movie, but it wasn't a disaster.
I thought I was going to hate it, but it was okay.
Yeah, I was going to say, because it is clearly derivative of Napoleon Dynamite. So as a fan, does it feel that way, or does it break away enough to have its own personality, have its...
I think I would have enjoyed the movie more had I not seen Napoleon Dynamite, or had Napoleon Dynamite not existed. But that said, it's mostly inoffensive. It's fine. There's some entertainment to be had. It just feels a little less authentic knowing that Napoleon Dynamite exists.
Yeah. And so much so that Bill Hader is in this movie.
Oh, that's right.
Is Uncle Rico in this movie? Does he make a cameo, or is that just John?
Are there any actors other than Napoleon's cameo?
No, I don't think so. No. Okay. But let's talk about who is in this movie? Justin Long is one of the main characters of this. He's kind of the dopey bully of the neighborhood. And in this neighborhood, there is kind of a group of three friends. One guy who's the protagonist, his name is Gavin, and then he's got a gigantic friend named Hobie. Maybe this. Oh, okay. So that was I'm seeing my name, the Hobie down, Hobie, who's this kind of giant guy, and he's played by this man called Hubble Palmer. And Hubble Palmer was the writer of a Minecraft movie. So that's the circle I was trying to make.
Okay, so say that again.
So Hobie, the big goofy friend.
He wrote the Minecraft movie?
He wrote the Minecraft movie.
What?
As well as something called 95 Senses, Masterminds, and Middle School, The Worst Years of My Life. He must know Jared Hess through that connection.
I wonder if he had any part in Napoleon Dynamite. Not necessarily acting, but just...
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, he was a staff writer on the TV series, because there was a TV series of Napoleon Dynamite. Oh, it must have been. Yeah. And that was in 2012. Huh. So he must have just hit it off with kind of that group. But yeah, that was the big reveal that I couldn't quite track down when I opened the show. So very much obviously in. Oh, and Carl Weathers is in this movie as the mayor. Is that who he was?
No, he played. I do remember him.
Oh, yeah.
He played the Sasquatch hunter, professional, like the world renowned expert on Sasquatch, who goes around and like investigates and legitimizes weather sight, kind of like to the Catholic Church with like Virgin Mary sightings or something, and they have to validate it. He's kind of the guy who has to go around and like validate the Bigfoot sightings.
Yes. So we have this small little town here. We have these two groups plus a bully group. I guess Justin Long isn't really the main bully of the town. He just kind of picks on the kids across the street because there's another tough guy bully group. And so they live in Clackanoma County.
Oh, right.
And one of them gets the idea... or they're all walking around taking there's a rumor maybe that Sasquatches ran, or they were just taking a walk in the forest and they find Bigfoot footprints and some droppings because the big gloob friend Minecraft trips and falls in the poop and gets it on his face or whatever. So they think they found evidence of Bigfoot. And so they run back to town and they want to get their video camera. All of this stuff, and then another group of people ends up finding them. But we're also during this movie jumping around. Like we get a chapter one and we kind of meet them, and then a chapter two. So it sort of bounces around this finding of the Bigfoot prints through the different people of the town. So we have the main group, then we have Justin Long and Shirts, his dopey friend.
And it's kind of told in Christopher Nolan style, not in chronological order.
Yeah. So that, which was, I thought was kind of a neat touch too, because it kept it moving a lot faster for, because there's not a whole lot going on in this movie. Yes.
And we should explain why Clackanoma County is funny for anyone who might not be from the Pacific Northwest.
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, so in the Portland, Oregon area, we have Clackamas County and Multnomah County. And so this is Clackanomah. It's the
and they acronym. Made some cool signs for Clackanomah Park, and like they really put some effort in to dress it as Clackanomah.
And I think there was a city hall or a courthouse or something that is the library.
The library at Oregon City. The original library, now there's a big, huge addition added onto the Oregon City Library. But the old section of it is used as, city hall or something like that. So we get
you can see the Clackanomah Courthouse.
The fire station across the street is from there. So that's one of the locations. I haven't done a deep dive on where the houses are yet. I did drive through Old Town West Lynn to see, because it kind of looked like maybe it was that area, and I thought just on the offhand I would be able to find something, but down in the frozen assets area of West Lynn,
the frozen assets district
of we have Whore Alley and we have the frozen assets districts. Stephen Tobolowsky also shows up in this movie as kind of a cameo-ish thing. He's the guy that is repossessing.
Who's that?
Stephen Tobolowsky, yeah, Ned Ryerson.
Oh, yeah, character actor
Stephen Tobolowsky, who has been, I thought, in more, but was in at least one other Portland at the movie. He was in, speaking of Whore Alley, The Last Innocent Man. He was like some random guy.
With
Ed Harris. Yeah. And I could have swore he showed up in a couple other ones, but I looked back at our list and his list and I didn't find anything. So still Marley Matlin still holds the record for non-local actor.
Yeah.
But yes, I've been listening back to, instead of watching this movie.
There's a new Marley Matlin documentary.
I saw that. Maybe we can get her somehow. I guess a podcast would be the worst, the worst forum for that to happen in, but, but yeah, I've been listening back to the old episodes because we're coming up toward the end of this year will be the 100th-ish episode of Portland at the Movies. And we did miss last month, but I think other than that, we've only missed like two other times in 10 years. So not a bad record, but
not our fault for missing last month.
No, we gave it our all. But yeah, it's been fun to go back and listen. The first time we discovered Russ Fast and his contributions to our thing, us discovering, going through the whole Fatal Revenge thing and trying to get that, us looking hopefully towards Chrome Soldiers and then having to watch Chrome Soldiers, movies I'd completely forgotten we had even covered. So that's been fun to do. But as this movie's jumping around, we're seeing this story kind of from a few different angles. And it turns out that it's Justin Long and Schertz, who maybe I should find just, I should give an example of
audio clip
of Schertz here.
And that was Justin Long's buddy, right?
Yeah. So here they are.
And he is the one, I believe, who like tries to do like a, oh, we said that it was, what's his name from American Movie? Mike
from, oh yeah, okay, so let's see if we can get into,
okay, yeah, so Schertz, who is Justin Long's semi-bully buddy in the movie, he has this very unique voice, and we discovered that he based that voice on the character of Mike from the documentary American Movie,
yes,
which if anyone has not seen, you should just cut this podcast off and go watch that because you'll probably enjoy that way more than
100 million percent. So yeah, we had thought, well, maybe he's doing a Napoleon Dynamite impression, but it is. Which is a pretty deep cut to do American Movie. So here's him talking to Justin Long.
It's them finance charges, I reckon they built up.
No crap, genius. Were you from Harvard?
Hey, you know what? Why don't you stop telling me things I already know and come up with a way for us to make this money? Because ain't no one taking the Firebird away from me. Is this or isn't this America? I thought we lived in a place where the government can't screw you over.
That's probably the worst clip I could ever take. So we're seeing them as, so it's their original idea, Justin Long and Schertz, to make a casting of a Bigfoot foot and plant that and plant a big poop. And they think by, or did they find it and then they were going to make money off of it?
I think they found it.
So who originally then put the Bigfoot thing there?
I guess it was them. And then, oh, maybe I think they did it. And then they got such a big reaction that they thought they could extend.
Because that's when Carl Weathers come to be like, we did it. We found this actual Bigfoot casing. And so Justin Long and his friend are going to try to sell castings of it over the internet. And then they quickly discover that everyone else on Earth is also making Bigfoot castings. There's also a girl in this movie. And her journey is kind of funny because before you really know, I mean, you know it's in chapters because it's a chapter one or whatever, but before you know that it's not in chronological order, like people will just show up unexplained and then not be there and stuff. And so you're like, what? And so this girl shows up when they're first finding the Bigfoot casting, the group of nerdy friends who LARP on the front lawn and play Dungeons and Dragons. And she's got her mouth wired shut. And so we're like, well, that's weird. And she's kind of part of the scene. Oh, and then we leave her. Then one of the chapters is told from her point of view. And she thinks she is overweight because of some comments like her mom made. And so her solution is to get her uncle, the dentist, to wire her jaw shut. And so her little thing. And she.
And I don't know why that made me think of the dentist played by Keanu Reeves in one of the other movies we watched.
Wasn't he in? Oh yeah, yeah. You're right. I was like, wasn't Keanu Reeves the dentist in this movie?
But no.
Yeah. What in the world was that in?
Another movie. I don't remember.
We just watched that a couple of weeks ago.
It was like a couple episodes ago.
Oh, that's so funny.
But yeah, that would have been cool if he could have been the orthodontist wiring her.
We have an and they all exist in the same universe, and we can have a big crossover dentist movie.
Yeah.
There was the first, I think, showing of the interior of a Burgerville in this movie. Ooh, and that was the Wilsonville Burgerville. They showed both upstairs ordering at the counter, and that is the only Burgerville that is two-story.
That blew my mind. I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a little area. It's like a courtyard area that's kind of at the bottom of these stairs because there's a weird hill that it's built on. So it was neat to see the inside of that for a little bit.
I was wrong. John Grease, who played Uncle Rico, is the sheriff in this movie, and he's also the guy in all three White Lotus episodes.
Oh, he was in this movie. Yeah.
So he's the sheriff.
Oh yeah, here it is. The cop is the uncle from Napoleon Dynamite by Rico. Oh, funny.
Okay, so we do a couple characters or actors crossover.
Any other locations where you remember from this movie? We have the Burger. Oh, Oaks Park we go to, which was redone as. It was either it was like one of those times where it's like super incredibly busy Oaks Park thing. It was like Magic Mountain Six Flags level of busyness because we see some laser tags and we see Big Pink and super full Midway. And I think that's where John Heder has a cameo. Oh, yeah, because he's in the laser tag. He's in charge of the laser tag thing. Oh. Shirts, there was a funny joke where Shirts, who is not wearing a shirt in this entire movie, and then Gene cut off shorts, they're at his house.
Do I remember correctly that the entire family doesn't wear shirts?
Yes.
Okay.
And so he's talking with Justin Long, and his dad comes in and immediately just takes off his shirt. And then later there's a scene where they're all at dinner, and like there's a dad and then another son and like a mom who's like in a bra, and they're just all not wearing a shirt the whole time.
That's one of the things that stuck with me.
In a good way or in a I can't ever forget that way.
Video Vern's was the video store that the girl works at.
Yes, I just saw that note too. So the girl who gets her jaw wired shut works at the video store, and she develops a crush. Now our main character, who was kind of the Napoleon Dynamite of this movie,
of weird because he's like the most normal character.
And that's what I was going to say. Like upon all this reflection on this movie and having seen it, he's too normal and cool to be playing that role to me, because he was like with this group of outsiders that nobody can understand or whatever, and like he's just a normal cool kid.
Yeah, and maybe they thought it would be too similar to Napoleon Dynamite if they made the main character again also the weird one.
It could be, because I mean even his friend, the huge guy, and then they've got a third friend who is this super short, blonde haired kid. Who was pretty? He had some fantastic lines in this movie.
Like, who? Such a weird group of friends. Like, how old do you think Toby was?
Well, one of my notes says, "No one in this movie is the same age."
Yeah,
because we've got the huge guy who looks to be 20 years old
at least.
We got our main character who's maybe 16 or 17,
right.
And the third friend who's like 10. The girl, she's working at a store, so must be 16-ish or something like that.
Yeah.
And then all of the neighborhood people are different ages, and the bullies are...
Have we mentioned the LARPing yet?
No. Why don't you tell people about the LARPing?
Well, I think that's the glue that holds this friend group together. That they go out and it's established that that's what they do in their free time, is that they have LARPing game sessions, I don't know what you call them, in the park. And, you know, they have different swords that have different powers and things, and... It's just established that that's their thing. Oh, and then that's what Justin Long, I think, makes fun of them for.
Yeah, because they're playing out in our front yard, and he lives across the street, and he's just like, Justin Long is the town loser, but doesn't know he's the loser, and so comes over to pick on those boys with his friend's shirts. But Justin Long needs money because Stephen Tobolowsky shows up and says, we're going to take your cool Trans Am. They had that red Trans Am with an eagle on top, which was my dream car growing up, with the T-top. Oh, so Justin Long has one of those, and that's going to get taken away because he hasn't been paying his bills. So he's trying to find money, which is why they think about casting the Bigfoot stamp or feet.
And the movie opens. It's very confusing. Do you remember how it opens? I remember that too.
Oh, doesn't it open on them LARPing in the front yard?
No, it opens at a demolition derby.
Oh, that's right. That's right. It is very Tarantino-esque. It's very Pulp Fiction, this movie.
But so it opens with Justin Long and Schertz in his Trans Am in a demolition derby.
Yeah.
And that scene lasts for like 45 seconds or something, and then it's not referenced again until the very end of the movie.
Because, yeah, he does not, spoilers, he does not get the money and thinks, oh, I can win $500 in this demolition derby. I'll be sure to win, and... The second the race starts, somebody just T-bones him, and that's how the movie opens and closes, which is pretty funny. So I thought a lot of things that legitimately made me laugh from this movie, and I really enjoyed it. I thought all the performances were great, even though like everyone's ages were all over the place and all of that. And I'm wondering, and I'm glad that you're here to weigh in on if this movie is enjoyable, if you're super familiar with Napoleon Dynamite, or does it just feel like you're watching a cheap knockoff?
Yeah, both.
I think it's
a little bit of both. And I would say that the ticket sales reflected people's lack of interest in this. It cost 170 times as much as what it made, and so they sunk $1.6 million in this movie.
Whoa.
And they made $9,800.
Wow.
It was open for less than 1 week in 9 theaters.
Wow.
9 theaters.
So not a wide release.
Did not have a wide release.
I wonder how it did on DVD.
That's true, because I mean, since they are so closely aping and wanting to get that Napoleon Dynamite money, I'm just surprised. With the people's involvement too,
it kind of seems like a made for video movie.
Maybe it was a straight to video thing that they just had to show in theaters for a week in order to be eligible
to be considered for an Academy Award
movie.
Best use of Stephen Tobolowsky in a movie. There was a point where the littlest friend, that like blonde haired kid who was super tiny but was so good the whole movie, has a line at the end. I get to miss school twice a week to see a therapist. And the way he delivered that line is so funny to me. And he just had all sorts of things like that coming in. I can't believe someone. Oh, and they had put, when they found the Bigfoot thing, they put the police tape around the area or whatever. And of course, there was just a big crowd that walked right through it. And one of the cops was like, I can't believe they broke through my yellow tape. That was pretty funny. let's see. So there was a jump scare in this movie. Do you guys remember as it was opening? A
jump scare.
We're looking at the opening credits. I forget what that opening scene was, even though you just talked about it. And we're getting through all these people. Mostly we don't know anyone but Justin Long, unless you like super know the ins and outs of Napoleon Dynamite. Then we get a produced by Kevin Spacey.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah. That was the jump scare.
Not age well.
Which is crazy because like Scandal noted. Have we talked about Scandal noted? There's a podcast that I listen to. That every time they're trying to talk about something, but like Kevin Spacey comes up or whatever, but they're trying to make a different point of it, like talking about the usual suspects or something like that. They'll just say Scandal noted. So like they don't have to get into everything. So Kevin Spacey, Scandal noted.
What is that Venn diagram? Kevin Spacey and Sasquatch Gang.
Outside of, I mean, Kevin Spacey, very serious actor taking serious roles, like not known to be a goofy Napoleon Dynamite children's movie.
No
type guy. So yeah, and it was, I looked him up and it's that Kevin Spacey, which is pretty funny.
Maybe it's because this movie starred a bunch of young boys.
I was gonna say something like, we don't know,
too soon,
allegedly.
He's making a comeback, guys.
Yeah, please don't sue us, Kevin Spacey.
On whose back?
Let's see, there was some pretty great in the credits. They thanked some really random people: the Dark Horse Comics, Hawkman, Def Leppard, George Nori, who is the guy that does Coast to Coast, which is the Art Bell radio show.
Oh, yeah.
He took over. George Nori took over Art Bell, and that's probably with all the Sasquatch type connections to this movie. So we had that. Lucasfilm was mentioned. Metallica was mentioned. The lady in Clackamas County office.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Got her own credit, which was great. Hong's Restaurant. Oh, yeah. Hong's Restaurant, Safari Club, and Lloyd Center were also in this.
So. I'll tell you something else that I remember about this movie is the main character's VHS collection.
Oh, right? Yeah. Talk about that.
So it is established early on that the main character, I don't remember his name because he's just kind of a...
Gavin?
I can't even... Gavin. Gavin. He has a collection of like obscure VHS tapes that he rents out to his friends, including like sightings of Bigfoot and alien autopsies and things of that sort.
And so popular he is, even the town bullies who bully him
rent
also
from him.
Rent VHS tapes from him in 2006, yeah. Which was pretty hilarious. So we didn't talk about those bullies much. They show up, I guess, and then they threaten them, and I kind of forget how that all.
Is this the Justin Long bullies or like the real bullies?
The real bullies, because the one guy tries to kiss the girl with the mouth thing when they go to the arcade. Oh, and then that's part of it.
She beats him or something.
She kicks him in the crotch or something like that.
Yeah,
I don't remember now.
Whatever.
No one does.
There's no way to find out what happens in this movie. Wait, I forget if this movie was on. It's probably on Tubi, I imagine. It's
I remember there's a weird, awkward scene when Toby... There's like this kind of weird love triangle where Toby like also develops a crush on the girl. But... And so he goes to the video store, and then we see the same scene play out from his perspective and from her perspective.
Yeah, because when we are meeting her, she's working at...
Video Vern's.
And... what's his name? Main boy comes up,
Gavin,
and is clueless and just renting Clash of the Titans and puts it on the counter. And Sophia, who is the girl, or Sophie, she's like, oh, this is my favorite, and is trying to flirt with him. It's like, this is my favorite movie, and he's like, oh, okay. She's like, oh, you know the part. This is a pretty great part. He's like, yeah, and she goes, oh, maybe we should watch it sometimes. He's like, well, I've already seen it. And so, like, just totally not picking up on it over and walks out. And so he tells that story to the friend Hobie, the giant friend. Hobie has a crush on Sophie. And so goes to this video Vern's thinking, oh, I'm going to play the same thing out. And so now he's trying to be like, I'm renting Clash of the Titans. And she's like, yeah, whatever.
Cool. Seen it. Thanks.
And then, yeah, that makes him kind of furious and for a while is kind of against Gavin and trying to foil the plans. So there's a part at the very ending where people are fighting in the forest around the Sasquatch tracks, because like the whole town is there. Carl Weathers shows up, then the bullies show up, and I forget what the bullies are trying. Maybe the bullies planted everything in the first place. I forgot. But they get in a tussle. Gavin and Sophie, the girl with her mouth wired shut, are standing by, standing around, and they get approached by the bullies. Maybe. Here. Shit. Hold on here.
Oh, I didn't think. Stupid man. Give my video back. No way. It's mine now. Give it to me.
So they get in a fight here.
Back off, Gavin. Give my video back.
They fight and push Gavin to the ground.
You want your stupid video? Why don't you get your dog to go fetch it?
So they're wrestling. Sophie's standing there, not sure what to do.
I was like halfway down when I...
Oh, no, okay. So here we go. And then this happens. Oh, what? My computer stops.
Get off me! Sit, dog!
Sophie tries to get the bullies off of Gavin. We see one of the main bully push Sophie to the ground, and we get a shot of her hitting that tree root.
Her head.
And I thought, oh my gosh, this is a $1 million baby situation, where the movie I thought we were gonna watch, the delightful boxing movie I thought I was watching, is now a horrifying paralysis story. And like, if you would change the music, that is like one of the worst falls I have ever seen. And she's just like knocked out for a little bit and comes back later because it's a children's movie. But I was like, holy shit.
It's pretty Sophie. Visceral. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that was crazy. The rest of the tone of this movie is so silly. And then we get this shot of her.
Watching that, though, reminds me that one of the bullies was Ash's sidekick in Ash versus Evil Dead. The Evil Dead follow-up series from Stars a few years ago.
Was any of that filmed? I mean, I know Bruce Campbell's from Portland.
It was all filmed in New Zealand.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's weird. I didn't associate with New Zealand to me for some reason. Anyway. Well, is there anything else that we want to say about the Sasquatch Gang? This isn't quite as in-depth as we usually get on movies, but I mean, this movie is more silly than anything, and there's not much going on. Yeah. And I thought it was fun and enjoyable, and if you got a 10-year-old kid, they'll totally... I almost figured a kid would love this, like for 8 to 10 would probably like this more than Napoleon Dynamite. Like, this is so much more fun and silly, and there's
Napoleon Dynamite pooping. Would be really dry for kids.
Yeah. So that's why I kind of thought this was like a fun on-ramp to that weird...
This is less art housey.
Yes.
Yeah, totally. There's a lot more poop involved. And Carl Weathers.
I was going to say, we did not touch on Carl very much, but he, as he does, he elevates most of the material that he is a part of, as happens in this one.
And at the end, we get a freeze frame of, let's see if I can find it, of Maynard, who is the youngest friend, a blonde-haired kid. Right. Just with like a maniacal, oh, now my whole computer's decided to shut down, but just a maniacal expression freeze frame on this Maynard kid. And then they have Gavin and Sophie have their first kiss, and it's like the most awkward, like gross teenage, like just weird lips with a head thing. And I laughed so hard at that. That was so funny. And then it comes back to that demolition derby at the end. So kind of an enjoyable movie, I thought, depending on your feelings of Napoleon Dynamite and the rehashing of, but it was kind of a fun surprise, especially with all those that connections to Minecraft all of a sudden are crazy.
That is.
So they must have just mined their pocket of friends, Jared Hess.
Yeah, I wonder what that's going to lead to for him going forward.
Yeah. Retirement, probably, if he's smart. So check it out. You can go to portlandatthemovies.com/map to see the couple locations. There's the Oregon City one and a couple
others. I think a follow-up to Napoleon Dynamite could be really interesting, to see like a middle age going in, you know, to old age Napoleon would kind of be interesting.
That would not surprise me at all if we were to get that someday. Uh-huh. What we should have talked about at the beginning of the episode was where we were just previous to this.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of Portland at the movies, Mark, where were we?
We were at the Shady Dell train park in Malala, which was where we had some featured cuts from Trainmaster.
That's right, Trainmaster. And the one road that you turn on right when you turn on, apparently that's where one of the scenes for Without a Paddle 2. There's like a little bridge there that I put a marker on that that was right there. But yeah, on dead end road in the middle of nowhere.
Almost
Malala.
No signs.
Not really. And then there's a giant, amazing to scale train park that you get to ride the little trains on the track.
Yeah,
little miniatures,
live steamers,
live. Get yourself a live steamer down in Malala. So
and just put it between your legs and off you go.
Go for it.
So and it was totally free, and I suggest making donations to them because. But the whole place is amazing. So if you are around Portland, I've never been to Malala, which I'd been to Malala, but not to that before.
I mean, these
so.
Are legit steam engines, just like quarter scale.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it you was, just they have cars that have a beam that run down the middle, and you just straddle it, and they drive you around the track that is over a mile.
Yeah, and they've got little town things set up. I was it reminds me of Knott's Berry Farm, which is a Southern California reference, but like. The off-brand theme park that has like the old West town that sort of vibe. So check that out.
Definitely as, a hidden gem.
Hidden gem as seen in Trainmaster, one of the best of our almost 100 movies that we've done. Well, that brings this episode to a close. Where is the Unipiper going to be doing this summer? Anything that people can do to check him out?
The Unipiper is going to be at Rose City Comic Con for the first time. I've done stage shows there before, but this will be the first year that I'll be there for the whole duration of the show with a table. You'll be there too with your VHS notebooks.
I will be excited. Yes, it'll be fun to do a show again. It feels like it's been a while. It's been since the Celtic Festival.
Which didn't happen this year.
And then that didn't happen this year because 9 people showed up last year. Just a shame, man, because boy, that was one of the best organized festivals that I've ever seen, and just was not. We did see the Screaming Orphans, though, so that's good. Mark, what about you? Anything people need to know about you?
Well, you and I host the Mark and Toddcast, whatever it's called, and you could find us on Fun Employment Radio and themarkandtoddcast.com.
Brian, you have your hand up. Would you
I
like
have
to
my hand up because I want to use this platform that we have developed here. And just in the off chance anyone listening knows Ewan McGregor, could you please get in contact with me? Because apparently Ewan McGregor is...
it wasn't apparently. It happened.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Ewan McGregor is... learning bagpipes, and he rides unicycle, and he is aware of the Unipiper, and he called me out in a recent podcast.
So how did you stumble across that podcast? Did somebody send it to you, or you were just happened to listening to whatever podcast that was?
No, somebody sent it to me, and it's a podcast called The Dish, and they've got, you know, like 200,000 followers or something. And they just talk about food with celebrity guests. And they had Ewan McGregor on there, and that's the topic that came up. And all of a sudden he's talking about, oh, yeah, there's this guy that does that. And he was talking about,
and I'm learning these two new hobbies. And one of the hosts was like, oh, you should put them together. And he's like, no, there's a guy that does that. Google him.
Yeah, and he's got a Darth Vader mask and flames shoot out of his bagpipes.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just... the thought of Darth Vader training Obi-Wan Kenobi to do this would just kind of be amazing.
That would, yes, now you are the master.
Yes. So that needs to happen.
Yes, so somebody telephone Ewan McGregor for us and pass his number along
please.
To us. So, well, thank you everyone for listening. I'll see if my computer is unfroze and we'll play whatever plays over the end credits. We will see you guys next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
And if...
like a stupid people breeding. Watson, it's really elementary. The Industrial Revolution. Producer Kevin Spacey. Revolution.